And it's wonderful how social media can connect us, those who tweet a lot. And can I say, librarians go hard on Twitter, and that's all. So I'm here to talk to you about partnerships today. Helen asked me to focus on partnerships. And one of the key things I think that we forget in libraries that we all have shared problems. And as having shared problems, we can actually come together for shared solutions. And I think our self-reliance, our ability to just get on and do it, sometimes negates that view of looking out and bringing a partner, because we think, oh, well, we better get on and do it. So I really think having partnerships and seeking partnerships needs to be really intentional, that we need to actually seek and find many more solutions. And libraries can come together in a myriad of ways, and different types of libraries can come together to find the solutions as well. And after all, we are in the sharing economy. It was mentioned today. Well, we lead the sharing economy. We're very good at it, so we should take a place in that and share with each other. But first of all, I thought you'd be interested in getting a snapshot of what's happening in Australia so that you know the context from where I'm coming. So Australia's a big country. I'm not sure that, sort of you realise how big, but, you know, distance is a real thing. And it actually has to be solved. So we don't have so many little libraries as you have. We have probably bigger libraries that are further away. So there's 32 times larger than the UK, so we can fit that many of the UK into Australia. Yet you have 2.7 times more people. So just think of that in terms of that space. So you have many, many more people. We're a bit happier than you, so it's time for you all to have a party, by the way. And maybe I see that as a gap that libraries can can fill. And we live a bit longer than you, and I think it's because Coca-Cola and fast food is a bit cheaper here, but of course that's fake news and not really a scientific causal reason. So the state of Australian libraries, expenditure in libraries is increasing in Australia, which is great. Our operational costs are increasing. This primarily is cost of living, sort of pressures. So like you, over 60% of our budgets would be staff. So as wages go up, so do our operational needs. This figure also includes capital costs. And you might have seen some beautiful new libraries. Local government are investing in new libraries in Australia, so that does include that cost. The per capita is close to $50 per person. Again, we have less people than you, so but that's a really good figure, and that is going up. And we have over 1,600 public library service points, and we still have mobile libraries and different kinds of service points that are a lot smaller. We still are one of the most visited cultural institutions, so we are certainly pulling our weight as a cultural place. But still, over 90% of the visits are to borrow a book, so a physical book. So still, quite a lot of visits are about loans. And visitors are staying longer, so increasingly in Australia, visitors are staying for over 4 hours. So, they are actually coming and using it as a public place, a place to be. A lot of our libraries have cafes in them now, so, they're co-working, they're coming to study, they're actually coming to be. My own library, here I'm a corporation, so I'm separate to local government, so I do have a bit of autonomy. I'm a local government in my own right, so I'm a corporation under the Local Government Act, and I report to a board. I provide services to three councils. Without their money, I wouldn't exist. That's where I come from. So we have 9 large branches. One's a little bit small, but 8 large branches and 1 small, a mobile library, an outreach vehicle, and a head office. I have all of the responsibilities of a local government, so I have to have all the policies in place, the procurement requirements, have my own HR, finance, that kind of service. So that's me. And it's not as easy as dividing by three. I have three very different councils. One is the Green Wedge, a rural council that is not going to grow. So as a Green Wedge, it can't develop. One is the highest growth centre in Victoria, so is on the outskirts of Melbourne and is becoming a dormitory suburb. So people work in the city, but you know, sort of come to that place to sleep. And one is highly suburban. So three very different councils. So what I wanted to talk to you about was some different partnerships that exist, and you know, sort of different reasons for partnerships. Some of these will be partnerships that Yarra Plenty Regional Library are involved with, and others are just Australian that I thought you'd be interested in. And I tried to choose quite different ones. So this is a public health pilot project. And this is a partnership that exists between four local government areas and the philanthropic foundation, the Gambling Foundation of Victoria. Now, the Gambling Foundation of Victoria funded this project to $300,000, and it is primarily a public health intervention project. And it was to reach people in specific communities at risk of gambling harm. So in Australia, our poker machines are owned by our supermarkets, which is wonderful, and they are wound up tighter than anywhere else in the world, so they don't give out as much as anywhere else in the world because we are horrible. And they also are places that welcome you. So they're open at night, they know your name, they give you a free cup of tea and something to eat. So, you know, sort of everything is there to bring you in and keep you in, and then you lose your house. So, you know, sort of they are highly, highly addictive. So this is four communities in Melbourne's northeast, and each have a public library with a high-loss gambling venue. So, you know, sort of the community is losing significant amount of community dollars to these gambling venues. The state government is earning heaps of money from these gambling venues as well. So, you know, there's heaps of tax dollars earned from those people who are losing all their money. And there's also very few other evening opportunities for these areas. So the communities are the City of Darebin, the City of Hume, Moreland's City Council, and the City of Whittlesea, which is one of my councils. This pilot was led by Judy Spokes from Moreland City Council and their mayor, so they came up with the project. But the project wouldn't have been funded if it didn't reach three other councils. So just one council doing this as a pilot project would not have attracted the funding. And it had a simple proposition that a regular nighttime learning opportunity or social get-together at the local library may divert people at risk of a loss spiral at the local pokies venue. So it was quite a simple premise, and this was what was going to be tested. So part of this was to create a meaningful experience, and we saw this from Simon, you know, sort of about the high street. And it's really important that libraries create meaningful experiences for the community. We've all heard about the loneliness epidemic. We know that people, you know, sort of are socially isolated. And we say that libraries solve this just by being. But libraries don't solve it just by being. We need to actually intentionally create a meaningful experience where somebody can meet somebody else. How many of your events actually invite people to speak to each other and introduce each other to each other? How many do you take the time out to create that meaningful experience? You leave it to adults to do themselves, but some, you know, small talk isn't something that happens easily anymore. We all sit there on our phones tweeting, or, you know, sort of it's far easier to do that in a queue than to engage anybody in a queue. Who talks to anybody in an elevator today? You know, sort of how many did you go up to and introduce yourself and do small talk? Small talk's hard. And if you don't do it often, you won't do it. So these issues and why libraries are part of this primary, you know, sort of health prevention is about that we can create meaningful experiences. But I want you to be intentional about it. So think about it and make it happen. Don't think just by being that it does happen. So, what did Libraries After Dark do? And we were funded to open once a week till 10:30 p.m. And socialisation was recognised as the main risk factor for gambling harm. So it was a key issue of why people went there. They felt lonely, they wanted to go somewhere. How do we know this? We actually asked people, what would you be doing if you weren't at the library at this time? What we got as an answer were things like, I'd be home alone crying. So social isolation is definitely a thing. So Libraries After Dark encouraged a really welcoming alternative to the poker venue. Another feedback form was, I had an argument with my husband and I needed to get out of the house. So they would have gone to the gambling venue because that was the only thing that was open, except they came to the library. So, you know, sort of part of this was those reasons. Now, some of this was based on actual evidence of previous strategies. So 11.7% of the total catchment area of 178,000 adults was deemed to be at risk of gambling harm. So we weren't there as the primary prevention for those who were already in the gambling spiral. We were there to do the at-risk, that secondary prevention, that secondary level of the community that were at risk. So it was really important that we recognised who we were trying to attract. We did have measures of success. I'm not going to read them. They're there. And we were assessed independently. So part of the building of evidence, you know, sort of was about whether we met these measures of success. So did we achieve them? So with the increased awareness of local libraries and alternative social option, we actually did believe that the targeted audience was reached. Now, we couldn't actually determine that, you know, sort of you were at gambling harm, you came. But how we actually assessed the evidence was through the feedback forms that people gave us, through the surveys we put out, and also the fact that all of the gambling services, harm services, paraphernalia that we put out went. People actually took it. So, you know, sort of, so that was how we believed that this happened. And some of the activities were done in partnership with support services. So we did quite a lot of documentaries, Three Sides of the Coin. We had financial experts come in, you know, sort of, so part of it was all of those services to reach out for that. So we believed that we actually managed that. Using a comparative door count statistics between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. and the stats collected in this year with Libraries After Dark, we could show that we had an increase in visitation at that time. So because most of the libraries weren't open until 10:30 p.m, we couldn't do that comparison, but certainly we could do a comparison on that same time for the same period. So clearly, those facing significant socioeconomic difficulties, such as the homeless and gamblers, did attend, so you could tell, you know, sort of, and certainly the staff at the branch could see that. And that was taken by both anecdotal and recorded observations. So, you know, sort of, that was how we actually built that evidence. So one of the issues, I suppose, with this program, remembering that we had to go back to the foundation to see whether we did this or not and whether it was effective, was did we actually reach the targeted audience? And we reached a lot more than the targeted audience, and that was difficult. And we did the marketing through postcards with a theme, and we offered a Coles voucher, you know, sort of for people to come in and give feedback. But it was really difficult for staff to gather that information. We didn't have the time to get the postcards out. There was a lot of difficulty with that approach, so it didn't really work. So the increased understanding of library staff, this was really successful. Library staff now understood, you know, sort of what was happening in their community, so that really, you know, sort of built up evidence of what was affecting people in their community. They knew what services to point people to, so, you know, sort of, and the broader services, and they really were able to support community members. So staff knowledge really did increase. Now, outcome four was definitely achieved, and this was possibly, you know, sort of one of the better outcomes, because the huge collaboration that happened between all four councils, the public health services within the region suddenly saw the library as a partner, a true partner, and saw the library as somebody who could be, you know, a partner in solutions for their issues. And the other key aspect was the reference group, which had council officers, library staff, public health experts, and the Gambling Harm Foundation, really gave a place where real evaluation and reflection could happen. And oftentimes in libraries, this evaluation and reflection doesn't happen because we're always on to the next thing. So this really, you know, sort of enabled the program. It's gone for a year, enabled the program to iterate, adjust, and, you know, sort of, and change over the year in response to that. So what were the key learnings? Food and drink is very important. I think Simon just said that too. So, you know, food and drink was really important. So it actually helped people. It made them feel welcome, and it really needed to happen within what we were providing. Consistent and high-profile branding was essential. All four libraries used that same brand, which you've seen throughout my slides of Libraries After Dark. And we really wanted to keep the message simple. We're open, we're here for you, come in, have a cup of tea. You know, sort of, so basically it was really simple. And widening the partnership base was really important to us too, because it wasn't just the libraries who had to activate the libraries after 10. It could be a partner could come in and activate that for you. And to look beyond the public library sector and the public approach was really valuable for this public health program. And, you know, sort of, that's the simple message everywhere. Libraries After Dark, open till 10 p.m. every Thursday. So it was the one day they knew it was open, and it was every week. So this approach also puts libraries into the area of practice-based evidence. And this is where I think we need to move to. So, you know, sort of, we've all been talking about evidence-based practice, you know, so that we actually do things based on evidence. What I'm talking about here is that we actually practice to build the evidence base. So what is the impact of libraries, and what are we doing to actually build the evidence that shows that impact? And what are we piloting and practicing to build that evidence to bring to our funders, you know, sort of to influencers and to our stakeholders in our communities? That means that there's a constant iteration, that we actually have a doing model approach. This is one I like to use, which is you plan it, not forever, and no, it won't be perfect. You do it, you practice it, you reflect on that, you change it, you act, and you iterate continually. And sometimes you kill it. Can I just say, in libraries, you know, sort of, we don't like to do too many new things because, oh my God, that community will love it, and then we have to kill it because we can't keep it. But, you know, sort of, a whole pilot approach, a practice approach, is about we're doing it to learn, and, you know, sort of, it's not going to go on forever, so we can kill it. Feel okay about killing it. But we're honest with the community at the start, you know, sort of, in we're learning here, we're practicing, it's not going to go on forever. The other key thing with this prototyping to build evidence is, just like Simon was talking about, our communities know more than we give them credit for. So we become a facilitator and invite the communities in, so that we're doing and prototyping with our communities, and possibly sometimes host and do it by the community, so we're letting them learn, rather than us as experts doing to the communities or doing it for them. So this is much more an enabling model and a facilitating model than us as experts doing it for you, and you take your medicine and that castor oil because it's good for you, for God's sake. So, you know, sort of, it is a real change. And the other key component for this practice-based evidence is that it is very much a local context, you know, sort of, that you can actually build it from that local base. So my next partnership is with Araluen in Yarra Plenty Regional Library. Now, Araluen is a not-for-profit. It provides a large range of quality services for people with intellectual disabilities. They're imaginative, they're caring, and they're directly inspired by the community that they serve and the families that these young people live in. It is focused on building skilled networks and self-confidence for those with intellectual disabilities to have great lives. They work quite closely with people with autism, Down syndrome, you know, sort of those sorts of communities. Now, Aranuan has provided two cafes for Yarra Plenty's libraries, and they can tell it much better than I can. I hope it works. I have to give it a couple of minutes to load.
But there wasn't a place where you could get a cup of coffee, so you could stay a long time. So it's fantastic that we have the chance to stay here, and people can stay for as long as they like.
The community has been nothing but happy to be in the cafe. They love it. They love stopping for a coffee. I see the mums and the bucks. They come here after the baby time, they have a coffee. They feed their baby on the high chair. I think it's a bright and wonderful future for Araluen and Yarra Plenty Regional Library. I find the staff at Chances really friendly and they make excellent coffee. My girls love coming to Chances Cafe because they do excellent babacinos. I feel that Chances creates opportunities for staff because they offer training, interaction with the public, and they learn to make excellent coffee.
My name is Lee and I am good serving customers. I like using the cash register. In the future, I want to learn other jobs. Chances Cafe is important to me to meet new people.
I work at the Chances Cafe and I do cleaning, coffees and handle food. I love learning new skills. I love Chances because I'm learning new things like coffee, snowfit, and handle foods.
So the aims of Chances Cafe is to get participants out into open employment, whether it be a small half a day job or a full time job. That is our main aim. You can see the dedication with the participants. We have some that are so dedicated that I swear if we had a 24 hour cafe that those people would be there 24 hours. It's offering valued role. It's offering normality and a place to be. A place to be valued, a place to be in a normal working role.
Here we see somebody with a disability serving a customer, learning a job and doing a job in a really wonderful way.
Chances Cafe is a very good job.
So that's a wonderful one, and you know, goes totally to our values of inclusion, diversity, and you know, sort of making people feel valued no matter you know, sort of what opportunities or what skills they have. So you know, that's a wonderful partnership. The next one I'm going to have to go through these really quickly now. The next one I'm showing you is one between Australian universities and public libraries, and this is much around the libraries as a position as education champions and places of learning, not just of recreation. So it was about, the premise of the research was there's a lack of support for regional and remote students, and you saw the map of Australia and, you know, sort of what a remote student could be, and that public libraries could actually work with universities to provide that framework. The framework has been developed, it's only just out, so literally this month is the articles. You can find out a bit more about the framework because I do think anywhere that, you know, public libraries can provide this learning support. And I think it gives us, you know, sort of that real focus of libraries as the place where opportunities and skills can be found. More information, you know, sort of can be found here. As well, and it's about giving public library staff an understanding of the higher education requirements and partnering with their local university. For more information, there's the details And an article was published on the 7th of May. So that's the first article out of this research. So it's actually really important for those students, but it gives the students, especially online students, a place to go and to study. The next one I want to talk about is a partnership between vendors, state governments, and the library industry taking their own research into the next step. So this is Project Lucy. It is about, it did require a healthy disregard for the impossible. So we, in State Library of Queensland, did some research about what a digital public library would look like back in 2012. We talked to an enormous amount of stakeholders, and the key things were that it be personal, that it connect me to people, that it connect me to content, and it connects me to place. I wanted to be connected locally. So this was exactly what a public library does on the high street, but they wanted it digitally as well. So what did that look like? So three state governments of Australia came together, and the Scottish National Government, and a commercial vendor, Solus UK, to explore what this platform could be. What did a Netflix for library look like? How to make it personal? And we've done the first report, has been done, and the specification. It could be national, but it knows where I live, so it can connect me locally to that library. It sits over any LMS because I believe in something beautiful called open APIs, and that people will open them up, and that it can actually be personal and powered by artificial intelligence and learn your preferences. So the first part of the report, you know, sort of, and that's a bit heavy, but you can just see what kinds of things would be in it. So it encompassed discovery, marketing, a customer relationship management, you know, an events plug-in. There'd be a social component so that you can connect, you know, sort of to people. So here's my holiday list, it matches Neil's, and, you know, sort of you might like to meet Neil, you know, sort of. So again, making sure that our values and choice is in there, an understanding about privacy and data analytics, and that people do have choices. It is due for development at the end of 2020, so watch this space. So it's a great example of libraries working together with a vendor to develop a product based on library know-how, library values, and that is user-focused, not collection-focused. So I think that's a really important switch, which is part of that online retail and the high street retail. You know, they want it personal. They don't want too much choice. This next one is another social science research partnership with local libraries. And the question was about information experience for non-library user immigrants, so people who prefer English as a second language. It was really interesting. And, you know, part of it was building the proof that libraries are a place of learning for new people, but also to the community, but also about bringing that sense of belonging, that sense of connection locally for people who are, you know, sort of from a non-English speaking background. The three partners are there: Logan City Libraries, University of Queensland, and the Queensland University of Technology. They're the researchers. The slides will be here, so you can get those further. Here's the, you know, sort of the outcomes. And it was really around information-seeking behaviour, which is important to us as libraries. And also, it was really about seeing those differences and similarities and then looking at what libraries do, our conversation groups, our English, you know, sort of as a second language group, our tutoring, and see how we connect those new people in our community to the community. And for more information, there's the contacts. So there are many more interesting, it was also a lightning talk, so at the APLIC conference in 2018, so more information can be found there as well. So there's more information and partnerships I could have cited here. There's BHP and State Library of Queensland, who did a pilot project around early literacy that led to a $20 million investment by the state government. Over 4 years, and, you know, sort of, and these are why pilot projects are good as proof, you know, sort of as those proof of concepts to build a budget process in. But The reason that we're good partners, and I wanted to put this up because, you know, sort of it is really important to acknowledge it to ourselves. We do have high empathy. Our staff are empathetic. You know, we do have high emotional intelligence. We can actually partner well because we don't stand there on our high horse and say it's all about us. We are curious. We want to know more about our communities. We want to know more about libraries, and we want to know more about individual people in our communities. This is really good for partnerships and seeking it. We are creative. We are under huge constraints, and constraints actually improve creativity, so we should celebrate. I know it's hard, but, you know, sort of we should celebrate that we have so many constraints. And we're actually audacious. You know, we do dare, and we do dare to think the impossible. So, you know, sort of we are there. So what I want to encourage you to do is to not to think you have to do it yourself, to think who would be our key partner. It could be a vendor, it could be a local business, it could be a street on the high street, it could be council, you know, sort of it could be a university, it could be the men's shed down the road. So, you know, sort of really think about that and reach out before you go, I can do it myself. We all know we can do it ourselves, but sometimes we'll get a better solution if we're in partnership. So thank you.